Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to be with you today. We have a lot to share, and we begin with a university in Athens, Greece. And it talks about the Mediterranean diet, plus what are called AREDS. Now, these are supplements, and what they do, they slow macular degeneration, the number one cause of blindness. The July-August issue of In Vivo reported the findings of a study that evaluated the effects of consuming a nutritional supplement based upon the age-related eye disease study formula. And that simply contained lutein, zeaxanthin, vitamin C, vitamin E, zinc, and copper, and a Mediterranean diet that has very little processed foods, not a whole lot of meat, but a lot of vegetables, a lot of nuts and seeds, lots of fruit, and seafood as well. And that's principally the diet. And when you did that, you really empowered the macula and you made it stronger. And that improved the whole idea of not losing your vision. So next time you're thinking, is there any really advantage of having a diet with lots of vegetables and fruits and whole grains and beans and nuts and seeds and olive oil? Yes. Saving your vision. All right? And this, what is called the AREDS study, showed that. And again, just to go over the supplements so that you can have them, I'm sure many of you are taking multiple vitamins, already take some of these, because you'll find them in your highest quality supplements. These would be zinc, copper, vitamin E, vitamin C, zeaxanthin, and lutein, L-U-T-E-I-N. So, once again, your rainbow vegetables and fruits and juices help you get that into your system each day. Another study, and this one is from the Laser Eye Clinic in India, too much screen time, whether in front of a computer or in front of a television, is not good for you. But taking the omega-3 fatty acids can ease computer-related dry eye. We have a lot of people with dry eye, and this is one way to help, the omega-3 fatty acids. I suggest 1,500 milligrams in the morning and another 1,500 in the early evening, and that can help. And that's what this study found. All right, so too much screen time, not good for the eyes, and this is one way to help. Another study from the University of California, San Diego, is that living in walkable neighborhoods can boost your social life and your health. Now, there are plenty of places in the United States where you can go out for a walk anytime. You're going to be safe. You're going to be in a good neighborhood. And then there are places where, that's going to be a problem. So one of the reasons I'm suggesting at this time that we spend more of our resources on boosting and rebuilding and repurposing our neighborhoods. Not to move people out, no, but rather to allow people who are living there to have a finer quality of life. We have the money to do it. We certainly could put it into the budgets, but we seem to be putting it into the wrong places. I'm sure many of you remember being able, when you were younger, to walk or run anywhere you wanted, especially as children. We weren't maximally supervised back then. Today, if parents today did what our parents did, you run to school, you bike to school, well, they could get arrested and they could have your children taken away. That's how strict we are about watching our children at all times, micromanaging their life. But in any case, if you want to boost your social life and your health, living in a neighborhood where everything is in walking distance is a key. And that's according to the research, University of California in San Diego. Environments that promote local connections can address the public health crisis of loneliness and isolation. And that's good. I'm glad that they did this. But think of it this way. How many times are older individuals kind of excluded any longer from going out, going to the bank, going shopping, because not all neighborhoods are safe? And we have more gangs in America, 30,000 different gangs, than ever before. We have no idea how many gangs members there are, only those who have been imprisoned, and then they associate with the gang. But we could have 10, 20 times those who haven't gone to prison yet, and they're all over the country. But they also prey upon senior citizens, and that's unfortunate. So senior citizens see all the different crime, especially for older people who are more helpless, and they stay isolated. In that isolation, a very important part of life is commingling, sharing ideas and energy. So how about this for an idea for every community in the United States? Let the state, the federal government, and the local community put in place a whole system, and I've had this idea for a long time, of where if you're a senior citizen and you feel lonely, you send in a resume with your finest life qualities. What can you do? Do easily and do well. And what are those qualities that other people benefit from? So then you have chat lines where people will have a topic. If you want to belong to that topic that day, then you go in and you can have multiple chat rooms where everybody has a chance. It'd just be like meeting together. If you can't physically, maybe because of some physical limitation, get to that location. But at least you'll be able to see people, talk, and then if you can get together, there should be these community centers where people can feel safe and get together. When I was going on a trip up the Hudson, driving, I wanted to see how many small towns exist between Manhattan and then in New Jersey and on the other side of the river, the Hudson River, on the east side. And there were at least 22 small communities, small meaning 5, 10,000 people up to 70,000 people. And one thing they all had in common, wonderful small downtown areas, mom and pop stores. And I did the same thing in Connecticut. People love being in those environments. First, it's safe. Secondly, you have the quaintness of whatever was popular back in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and 60s is recreated there. And so you feel like you're taking a trip back in time while you're visiting something. It's like Knott's Berry's Farm in California. Every time I used to go to California, I always go down there because of the environment itself, taking you back in time. So we need more of that. So why not put money into developing safe places for people to walk, where they can meet, where they can socialize, and also call centers where people who have a skill and are just not able, maybe they're retired, they can't share it anymore. Now you have, pick a topic. Let's say it's gardening. And everyone who knows how to garden is a master gardener, you're on that site. And so you have rotating people giving classes from their homes over a Zoom. And that way people all over the world could watch someone and get the benefit of all that wonderful knowledge, the wise woman, the wise man. We need that. That's doable. All right? So that way there's no longer the loneliness. There's a connection. There's being relevant again, sharing that worldwide knowledge. Yeah, it's important. And it makes you healthier in the process. Neighborhood quality of life. We can do it. In fact, just take a block, any block, and make that block vital again. Make it safe again. Make it all the people work together again. From the Swedish School of Sports and Health Science, cardiorespiratory fitness levels are associated with lower cancer death in men. Research led by the Swedish School of Sports and Health Sciences has compared cardiorespiratory fitness levels and the risk of three of the most common cancers in men. 17,700 men across a wide range from 18 years old to 75, with 42 being the mean. And they did this over 9 years. And they found that the more active you are, the less colon cancer, lung cancer, and prostate cancers. So just exercising makes a huge difference in preventing these life-challenging conditions, these cancers. Just get out and exercise on a regular basis. And finally, a new study published in the current issue of Oncology reported that cancer of the prostate, which is one of the most common malignancies in men, can be affected when you put curcumin into the diet. By the way, there are a lot of studies on curcumin and its life-enhancing properties. So use curcumin, 500, 1,000, 2,000 milligrams a day. Does a lot of good. Oh, and by the way, from the Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies, a single tick bite can pack double pathogen punch, meaning people get bitten by the black leg tick have a higher than expected chance of being exposed to more than one pathogen at the same time. This was published in the PLOS One journal and conducted by scientists at Bard College, Sarah Lawrence College, and Cary Institute of Ecosystems. Quote, we found that ticks are almost twice as likely to be infected with two pathogens, the bacterium that causes Lyme disease and the protozoan that causes another infection. So one of the things I do anytime I'm in the woods, which is a lot, and I'm here in the woods, I could get bitten by ticks, never have, because I always wear white socks and I pull the white socks up over my pants. And then I put coconut oil when I'm out without long pants on my legs. And also I put some Vaseline around the bottom of my shoes. And then when I'm out, I just check down to see if I can see any ticks. And if I do, you know, I take the tick off so it doesn't get on me. It's just, you know, being conscious, because when you're walking through the woods and you're touching trees and brush, which you will, the ticks are up on those leaves. In fact, my producer, Richard Gale, who lives upstate New York, beautiful area, but loaded with ticks, and almost everyone has Lyme's disease. He said he's walking in. He's talking to me on the phone. He says a tick just fell right in his hand from a tree. And of course, where you have deer, you're going to have a lot of ticks. Oh, by the way, where you have possums, they're the one creature that loves to eat ticks. In fact, there are photographs online that show deer standing there while a possum goes over their face and eyes and head, everywhere, eating all the ticks off. So don't kill possums. And by the way, when you go towards a possum, it just rolls up like it's dead, playing dead. Doesn't have any way to protect itself. But they eat all kinds of insects, spiders, anything on the ground. But watch yourself for ticks. And if you do get bitten by a tick, first of all, get the tick so you can find out what kind of tick it is. Not all ticks are going to give you Lyme's disease. And then look for the holistic treatments, which I have found help people better than anything else. So that's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break. And please remember, I also, every day, I do a program, short, 5-minute, 10-minute, an hour. It depends upon the topic. It's called A Classroom on the Air. And starting later this week, I'm going to be taking on women's health issues and like on menopause, because I've done the studies. I've done the clinical studies, and I've counseled tens of thousands of women, helping them with menopausal symptoms. But if you go to Gary Nall YouTube, you can download hundreds of classrooms on there. They're free, public service, and hopefully they'll help you. The last two I did this week were for the anti-aging clinical study, those that were on campus and those that were the control group at home. Two different lectures, but they're all based upon how well you're able to understand your own life journey. And I give 10 questions out. So if you'd like to see what those are and if they can help you better understand your own life journey, where you're at, what changes need to occur, how you can make those changes, you can go to Rumble, Odyssey, or to Gary Nall YouTube and look for the classrooms on the air. They're non-controversial topics. They're just meant to help people. And from the feedback I've received, a lot of people appreciate them. All right? Also, if you want to watch the program, because I'm Zoom video streaming it, just go to prn.live, then scroll down to the archives and scroll to Gary and All. And not only can you watch me right now in my study broadcasting, but all the clips I'm going to be showing today are going to be presented as well. We have some really interesting clips today. So we're going to take a break and come right back. Oh, and by the way, our new catalog, you can see by going to PRN.live. It shows all the hosts and very nicely done. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Also, if you want to watch the program, because I'm Zoom video streaming it, just go to PRN.live, then scroll down to the archives and scroll to Gary and All. And not only can you watch me right now in my study broadcasting, but all the clips I'm going to be showing today are going to be presented as well. We have some really interesting clips today. So we're going to take a break and come right back. Oh, and by the way, our new catalog, you can see by going to PRN.live. It shows all the hosts and very nicely done. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you all with us. I'm Gary Nall. I'm going to play a series of clips. I'm going to do a few commentaries, and I'd like your response, please. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. No one in the medical and scientific establishment has come forward to say, we got it wrong, we apologize, we're going to open ourselves up to change. We're going to look at the real science, not the corporate science, not the political science, not the ideological science that governed virtually every aspect of the COVID pandemic. Now, why am I interested in this? Because now, for those who were correct, that means they saved lives. For those who are incorrect, it means they cost lives, millions. We're talking about what could amount to an intellectual genocide, where the intellects, the status of a person within a given field, science, medicine, public health, media, was such that whatever they said, those sycophants and other true believers went along with. So if they said, get your damn shots, as a woman said on NBC, people went out to get their shots. If Howard Stern and others who are popular in their field tell their audience, get your shots, and anyone who doesn't, well, you're stupid, and Jimmy Kimmel, you know, you should die, because that's what it counts to, talking, and over on CNN, Don Lemon, that if you have two people who are sick and they both go to the hospital, one vaccinated, one not, the person that was vaccinated should get the treatment. The other should just die. That's what it amounts to. Cruel, harsh. In effect, we created an apartheid state. The vaccinated punished, ridiculed, mocked, canceled, and the vaccinated rewarded, complimented. And this is today's global research. Quote, 14 professional soccer players died suddenly in the past 6 months. Five died just in the month of June 2023. And then it goes into this, and it shows photographs. These are people at the top of their game. What did they die from? Cardiac arrest, heart attacks. Now, some of these are multi-million dollar players. And you look at their background, they're at the top of their game. I mean, you just don't get any healthier than a soccer player. They're the healthiest of all athletes because they had to be running strong, powerful, flexible, with great endurance for an entire game. So 32 years old, dead, in their 20s, dead. Now you would think that that would raise someone's interest, but it doesn't. Teenagers, soccer players, basketball players, dying. Heart attacks. Since when did we ever have this? We never have. Cardiac arrest on the football pitch. Now, that's just the newest compilation. And now there's a whole list of people up on the internet who have died like this. Now we have other doctors coming up with reports about the increased number of dead in all areas and above and beyond normal, including adding in COVID deaths. This goes above that. And you think, wow. How in the world could we have anywhere from 20 to 40% increase in normal deaths. And the only thing that was different were the vaccines. And the only time frame was different was the onset of the vaccines. And now we're seeing increasing death because not everybody got four or five vaccines. And what about this world-class bodybuilder? I mean, he was ripped. He was 30 years old, dropped dead, heart attack. And no one wants to say that it was the vaccines. You see, because once they start admitting that, they open a door. There's a basic concept in law. An attorney, whether for the defense or prosecution, should never ask a question they don't already know the answer. Otherwise, you open a door that swings back the other way. You can be discredited or your information or testimony. So the media has not had anyone on who's an expert in, like Ed Dowd, who is not a medical person, but he works with numbers on Wall Street. In fact, he ran a BlackRock division. Now, as you know, I'm no supporter of BlackRock. I think it's a company that should be disbanded. It's the most powerful company in the world, with the most powerful person running the company, which makes him the most powerful person in the world. No, the Saudi Arabian king and the king of Emirates and or the emir of Emirates or president of the United States, they're chump change compared to this guy because he controls $20 trillion in assets. He's bought interest in shares of stock as a stockholder in corporations where he has control over the board or at least has his people on the board. So when you own your own competition, you game the system. It's like a politician. A politician, if they get a call from a stockbroker saying, hey, I want to share something with you. X corporation is going to be bought by Y corporation, so sell your stock in X and buy it in the one that's buying this, and you'll get the benefits. And so you do that. That's insider trading. You'll go to jail for that. And if you lie about doing insider trading, you'll go to jail for lying about it, even if you didn't do it. Martha Stewart's an example. But members of Congress sit on committees where mergers and acquisitions are discussed. They immediately then after the meeting call and say, sell this stock, buy that stock. How else do you explain someone's earning over $130 million on salary from the House, like Nancy Pelosi or other people? And yet none of this becomes an issue when you're in power. None of the defects in your philosophy or systems is ever mentioned. Let me give you a good example of this. We have one of the greatest whistleblowers of all time. Now, mind you, he wasn't the first or the most important whistleblower, but he was certainly significant, Daniel Ellsberg. Now, Ellsberg put it all on the line. He got documents out of, thousands of documents, out of an important corporation that was a policymaking corporation for governmental agencies, including the Defense Department, Secretary of Defense. So this told the truth about Vietnam and why we shouldn't be there and why we should get out and close this whole disaster off. And we would have stayed in Vietnam had it not been for Daniel Ellsberg. And Richard and I both spoke with Ellsberg a couple months ago to see if he would like any help with his terminal condition. He didn't, and that was it. But he was in his mid-90s, and he accepted his demise, talked about it. But he was a noble person, an American hero. But what about Upton St. Clair? What about the author of The Jungle? Way back in the early 1900s, talking about the Chicago meatpacking plants, how dirty they were, how dangerous it was, how a guy fell into a vat that was churning up meat, and they just, you know, that was it. Nothing happened to anybody because it was too expensive to close it all down and clean it all out. I mean, we've always had problems, and we've always had Jack Andersons and people who would tell us the truth. Here's Daniel Ellsberg in his own words, explaining what he did. It's a short clip. And also, this is just our way of saying thank you for a lifetime of dedication to the people of this country.
My name is Dan Ellsberg. In 1971, I gave 7,000 pages of top secret documents. It came to be known as the Pentagon Papers. It was a study of U.S. decision-making in Vietnam from 1945 to 1968. I was put on trial, facing eventually 12 felony counts, a possible sentence of 115 years. And that was voided in the end, 2 years later, after many months in court, when it turned out that President Nixon, in an effort to silence me, had taken a series of of criminal actions in order to shut me up, including going into my former psychoanalyst's office to get information to blackmail me into silence. Later, brought a dozen CIA operatives up to Washington to, quote, incapacitate me totally. When those crimes came out, thanks to Watergate and to John Dean and others, and were eventually proven by documents and by the tapes that Nixon had made, Nixon faced impeachment, had to resign, and that made the war endable. It ended 9 months later.
Okay. Now, here's another whistleblower, but they will not get any identity or credit. Organ trafficking controlled by Ukrainian Secret Service. Quote, organ trafficking controlled by Ukrainian Secret Service. Over the past 9 years, the Ukrainian government has adopted numerous laws facilitating organ transplantation. In 2021, the Ukrainian Parliament approved Law 5831, stipulating Ukrainians, including children, can become organ donors after their death without their notarized consent or without relatives' consent. This situation, combined with the ongoing military operation, raises concern about the growing number of missing people and their connection to illegal surgeries. Then it goes on from there. And this is from TME/Military Wave. Now, we followed up on this, and this is accurate, but no one in the mainstream media wants to talk about why, because how can you justify people that have already been shown to have caused a civil war that the United States, Gloria Nuland, and Barack Obama, and our Justice Department, State Department, Pentagon, all supported, including Hillary Clinton, who was Secretary of State. It was an illegal coup costing $5 billion. But we won. We took over Ukraine. Then the Ukrainians started killing about 12,000 Ukrainian Russian-speaking citizens who lived near Russia at the border. Not a single editorial against them. No condemnation. And that's when that's when Vladimir Putin began to push back and say, stop this. But they wouldn't stop it. And why is it at no time in Congress, by any person, have you heard them condemn the war based upon the provocation against Russia? You haven't, and you won't. And what about the journalists who are, like Daniel Ellsberg, they are conscientious? I want to give you an example of a modern-day Daniel Ellsberg. His name is Max Blumenthal. Now, this is something you have not heard or seen, but we managed to get this, the actual UN tape, and I want you to listen to what this one person who's been on this program, Max Blumenthal, addresses the United Nations Security Council on Ukraine aid. It's a longer clip, but what Daniel Ellsberg did back in the 70s, he's done today. And he's talking about everything that we should know that we were lied to by the media and by foundations, by think tanks, by the neocons, by the neoliberal hegemonic rulers of our country. Max Blumenthal, now at the United Nations.
I now give the floor to Mr. Max Blumenthal.
Thank you, and I thank Alex Rubenstein and Wyatt Reed for helping me prepare this address. Wyatt Reed is a journalistic colleague of mine who in October 2022 happened to be in Donetsk when his hotel was shelled by the Ukrainian military with a apparently U.S.-made howitzer nearly killing him. He was 100 meters away. I'm also here with my friend, the civil rights activist Randy Credico, who is more recently in Donetsk and witnessed regular HIMARS attacks on civilian targets. I am here not only as a journalist who spent over 20 years writing books, producing documentaries, and writing articles about conflict and politics from several continents. I'm also here as an American taxpayer who's been dragooned into funding a proxy war that has become a threat to the regional and international stability at the expense of my countrymen and women. This June 28th, as emergency crews worked to clean up yet another toxic train derailment in the United States, this time on the Montana River, further exposing our nation's chronically underfunded infrastructure and its threats to our health, The Pentagon announced plans to send an additional $500 million worth of military aid to Ukraine. The development came as Ukraine's army enters the third week of a vaunted counteroffensive that CNN describes as, quote, not meeting expectations, and which even Volodymyr Zelensky says is going slower than desired. As Ukraine's military failed to breach Russia's primary defense line, CNN reported on June 12th that Kiev had lost, quote, lost, 16 U.S.-made armored vehicles sent to the country. So what did the Pentagon do? It simply passed that bill down to average U.S. taxpayers like myself, charging us another $325 million to replace Ukraine's squandered military stock. There was zero effort to consult the U.S. public's position on the matter, and the vast majority of Americans likely did not even know the exchange took place. This policy that I'm describing to you, which sees Washington prioritize unrestrained funding for a proxy war with a nuclear power in a foreign land where our domestic infrastructure falls apart before our eyes, exposes a disturbing dynamic at the heart of the Ukraine conflict, an international Ponzi scheme that enables Western elites to seize hard-earned wealth from the hands of average U.S. citizens and funnel it into the coffers of a foreign government that even Transparency International ranks as consistently one of the most corrupt in Europe. The U.S. government has yet to conduct an official audit of its funding for Ukraine. The American public has no idea where their tax dollars are going. And that's why this week, we at the Gray Zone published an independent audit of U.S. tax dollar allocation to Ukraine throughout the fiscal years 2022 and 23. Our investigation was led by Heather Kaiser, a former military intelligence officer who served in Iraq and Afghanistan. We found, among many bizarre payments, a $4.5 million payment from the U.S. Social Security Administration to the Kiev government. We found $4.5 billion worth of payments from the U.S. Agency for International Development to pay off Ukraine's sovereign debt, much of which is owned by the global investment firm BlackRock. That amounts to $30 taken from every U.S. citizen at a time when 4 in 10 Americans cannot afford a $400 emergency. We found tax dollars earmarked for Ukraine, padding the budgets of a television station in Toronto, a pro-NATO think tank in Poland, and believe it or not, even rural farmers in Kenya. We found tens of millions to private equity firms, including one in the Republic of Georgia, as well as $1 million payment to a single private entrepreneur in Kiev. Our audit also revealed the Pentagon's $4.5 million contract with a company called Atlantic Diving Supply to provide Ukraine with unspecified explosives equipment. This is a notoriously corrupt company that none other than Tom Tillis, the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, previously lambasted for its, quote, history of fraud. Yet once again, Congress has failed to ensure these shady payments and massive arms deals are properly tracked. In fact, much of the military and humanitarian aid shipped to Ukraine has simply vanished. Last year, CBS News quoted the director of a pro-Zelensky nonprofit in Ukraine who reported that only 30% of aid was reaching the front lines. The embezzlement of funds and supplies is at least as troubling as the potential consequences of the illicit transfer and sales of military-grade weapons. Last June, the head of Interpol warned that the massive transfers of arms into Ukraine means, quote, we can expect an influx of weapons in Europe and beyond, and that criminals are now, as we speak, focusing on them. This May, a group of anti-Kremlin Russian exiles outfitted with gear supplied by the Ukrainian government was hailed by Western politicians for carrying out terrorist attacks in Russian territory using American-made Humvees. Although the group, the so-called Russian Volunteer Corps, is led by a man who calls himself the, quote, White King, and includes numerous open admirers of Adolf Hitler, described as neo-Nazis in U.S. mainstream media, the Western weaponization of this militia against Russian forces and Russian civilians has not prompted any outcry from Congress. And while the Biden administration has promised that it's keeping tabs on the weapons sent, a State Department cable leaked last December conceded that, quote, kinetic activity and active combat between Ukrainian and Russian forces create an environment in which standard verification measures are sometimes impracticable or impossible. The Biden administration not only knows that it cannot track the weapons it's shipping to Ukraine, it knows that it is escalating a proxy war against the world's largest nuclear power and daring it to respond in kind. We know this because back in 2014, and this timeline is so important, that's when NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said that the war started following a U.S.-backed coup d'etat. President Barack Obama rejected demands from Kiev to send lethal offensive weaponry Because as the Wall Street Journal put it, he had a, quote, long-standing concern that arming Ukraine would provoke Moscow into further escalation that would drag Washington into a proxy war. When Donald Trump entered office in 2017, he attempted to hold the line on Barack Obama's policy, but was soon branded a Russian puppet by the Beltway Press Corps and the Democratic Party for refusing to send Raytheon's Javelin missiles to the Ukrainian military. His reluctance to send the Javelins became a central theme of his impeachment, and he predictably relented. As U.S.-made offensive weaponry began to reach the front lines of the Donbass, the collective West exploited the Minsk Accords to, quote, give Ukraine time to arm up, as the former German Chancellor Angela Merkel put it. In January 2022, the U.S. announced a $200 million arms package to Ukraine. Follow the timeline. By the 18th of February, observers from the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe reported a doubling in ceasefire violations, with OSCE maps showing the overwhelming majority of targeted sites on the side of pro-Russian separatists in Donetsk and Lugansk. 5 days later, Russia invaded Ukraine. And since then, the U.S. and its allies have been scurrying up the escalation ladder at every opportunity. Quote, things we couldn't give in January because it was escalatory were given in February, a former State Department official complained after meeting with Ukrainian counterparts. And things we couldn't give in February, we can in April. That has been the distinct pattern, starting with, for crying out loud, stingers, referring to shoulder-mounted rockets. Joe Biden himself said in March 2022, the idea that we're going to send in offensive equipment and have planes and tanks, don't kid yourself. No matter what you all say, that's called World War III. Just over a year later, Biden changed his tune, backing a plan to provide F-16 fighter jets to Ukraine, and after pressuring Germany to send in the tanks he once feared would provoke World War III. It would only take 2 months from the time Ukraine received Lockheed-made HIMARS systems for the U.S. for the Ukrainian military to begin targeting critical infrastructure, using them to strike the Antonovsky Bridge over the Dnipro River, and again, 2 months later, in a test strike on the Kakhovka Dam to see if the Dnipro's water could be raised enough to stymie Russian crossings, as the Washington Post reported. 3 weeks ago, the Kakhovka Dam was destroyed, triggering a major environmental catastrophe that caused mass flooding and contamination of the local water supply. Ukraine, of course, blames Russia for this attack, but has produced no evidence. Around this time, Ukraine also baselessly accused Russia of planning a provocation at the Zaporizhia nuclear plant. This triggered a resolution by Senators Lindsey Graham and Richard Blumenthal, no relation to me, calling for NATO to intervene directly in Ukraine and attack Russia if such an incident occurred. The move by Blumenthal and Graham thus established a de facto red line for initiating U.S. military action, much like the one set down in Syria, which, as a former U.S. diplomat commented to journalist Charles Glass, was an open invitation to a false flag. Will we see another Duma deception, but this time in Zaporizhia? This time with nuclear consequences? Why are we doing this? Why are we tempting nuclear annihilation by flooding Ukraine with advanced weapons and sabotaging negotiations at every turn? We've been told by people like Senator Dick Durbin that Ukraine is literally in a battle for freedom and democracy itself. And therefore, anyone who opposes military aid to Ukraine opposes the very defense of democracy, according to this logic. So where's the democracy in Vladimir Zelensky's decision to ban opposition parties, to criminalize the media outlets of his legitimate political opponents, to jail his top political rival and his deputies, to raid Orthodox churches and jail clergymen? Where is the democracy in the Ukrainian government's imprisonment of Gonzalo Lira, an American citizen, simply for challenging the official narrative of Ukraine's war? And where is the democracy in Zelensky's recent decision to suspend elections in 2024 on the grounds that martial law has been declared? The answer is that Ukrainian democracy is harder to find these days than that country's commander-in-chief, Valery Zaluzhny. Senator Lindsey Graham has offered a much more grim and more on-the-mark rationale for supplying Ukraine with billions in weapons. As the senator boasted during a recent visit with Zelensky in Kiev, the Russians are dying. It's the best money we've ever spent. I repeat, the Russians are dying. It's the best money we've ever spent. And Graham has also said that Americans are ready to fight this war down to the last Ukrainian. While official casualty numbers are strictly classified, we must worry that Ukraine is well on its way to fulfilling the senator's ghoulish fantasies. As a Ukrainian soldier complained this month to Vice News, we don't know what Zelensky's plans are, but, quote, it looks like the extermination of its own population, like of the combat-ready and working-age population. That's it. Indeed, military cemeteries in Ukraine are expanding almost as rapidly as the Northern Virginia McMansions and beachfront estates of executives from Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, and assorted beltway contractors benefiting from the second highest level of military spending since World War II. These are the real winners of the Ukraine proxy war, not average Ukrainians or Americans or Russians. The winners, or Europeans for that matter, the winners are people like Secretary of State Tony Blinken, who spent his time between the Obama and Biden administrations launching a consulting firm called WestExec Advisors, which secured lucrative government contracts for intelligence firms in the arms industry. Blinken's former partners at WestExec include Director of National Intelligence Avril Haines, CIA Deputy Director David Cohen, former White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, and almost a dozen current and former members of Biden's national security team. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, for his part, is a former and possibly future member of board member of Raytheon and an ex-partner of Pine Island Capital Investment, which collaborates with WestExec and which Blinken himself has advised. Meanwhile, the current U.S. ambassador to this body, the UN, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, is listed as a senior counsel at the Albright-Stonebridge Group, a self-described commercial diplomacy firm that also finesses government contracts for the intelligence and arms sector, and which was founded by Madeleine Albright, infamously known for her comments that the deaths by sanctions of 500,000 Iraqi children were worth it. So while military-age Ukrainian men are ripped off the streets by military police and sent to the front lines, the financially and politically connected architects of this proxy war are planning to walk through the revolving door to reap unimaginable profits once their time in the Biden administration is over. For them, a negotiated settlement to this territorial dispute means an end to the cash cow of close to $150 billion in U.S. aid to Ukraine. So in closing, when the United States, my country, a permanent member of this council, has fallen under the control of a bipartisan regime which seeks to perpetuate a proxy war for as long as it takes, in the words of Joe Biden, which considers diplomacy synonymous with unilateral coercive measures to, quote, turn the ruble to rubble, as Biden pledged to do, whose leadership subverts negotiations in order to pursue profit while refusing to properly inform its own citizens what they're paying for, and pushes the sons and brothers of its supposed Ukrainian partners out onto a killing field in order to bludgeon a geopolitical rival, when both Zelensky and members of U.S. Congress are calling for preemptive strikes on Russia, which have nothing to do with Article 51 of the UN Charter, this Council must take action to enforce that Charter. That Charter is clear that the Security Council must use its authority to guarantee a pacific settlement of dispute, particularly when it threatens international security. That should not only apply to Russia and Ukraine. This Council has an obligation to strictly monitor and restrain the U.S. and the illegal military formation known as NATO. Thank you.
Again, he is a whistleblower. He is liberal, was Democrat, and now the entire liberal corporate that is different from the non-aligned liberal that is still maintaining traditional liberal values of seeking the truth and not censorship and open to transparency versus everything being obfuscated, he is attacked. So too, Abby Martin, one of the finest journalists in the world, when she was risking her own life, and she was actually targeted for assassination in Israel when she was there to show the March of Peace where no one was armed, and yet the snipers are just shooting these people one after the other. No American media would cover it. So now we're a country where Julian Assange is being punished for telling the truth and exposing corporate and government frauds. But so too, Drake and Snowden, all these really courageous whistleblowers. And as I said, which presidential candidate will acknowledge that on the very first day they absolutely positively promise to pardon every whistleblower and to make them whole in the money and wages, income, legal expenses that it's cost them, and then to set up a whistleblower monument park as close to the Justice Department as possible? Because you couldn't have this punishment against Julian Assange unless you had already control over our justice apparatus, which is completely captured. They lie constantly, and they're not called out, except on now by some members of Congress who are calling him out. This is the latest, for example, from another institute that just tells the truth And yet their attack, the Brownstone Institute, their law and technology division. And here's what it says. I'll just go for a short piece. Now, this is all about the CISA was behind the attempt to control your thought, speech, and life. So while those of us, like Richard Gale myself, we wrote more articles on what to do if you have COVID than any other journalist in the United States. The very first radio program in the United States or public forum to talk about what you can do so that you minimize the effects of the virus. Three of those articles, one, two, three, we wrote, showing the discrepancies in the proof of it in good scholarship that has not been refuted by anyone. 31 articles. These are not little articles. My latest article is almost 40 pages long with 1,000 footnotes, and we're writing every day. I'm researching. So the truth is not told. So when we show that there are people behind the scenes controlling everything about COVID, but controlling everything about the getting rid of the cash, making us a cashless society, so they control every purchase you make, every one of these dozens of different efforts, controlling our food supply. There's a new article out today about how unsafe meatless meat is. It's all genetically owned, well, controlled and grown. Who owns it? Bill Gates and others. Excuse me, not Bill Gates. Bill Melinda Foundation, the Gates Foundation, yeah. And they control it. Who's controlling the dimming of the sun? Bill Gates, again. And yet never once questioned, only supported. And you're challenging it, you're suddenly attacked. Now, let me just show you who is behind the scenes. And this you do not know. This is brand new information, quote, from the Brownstone Institute. Keeping up with the corruption of the COVID regime feels like drinking from a fire hose. The volume of the fraud, the pace of new discoveries, and the breadth of the operations are overwhelming. This makes it imperative for groups like Brownstone Institute to digest the onslaught of information and communicate salient themes and dispositive facts, particularly given the dereliction of mainstream media. On Monday, this is the important part, the House Judiciary Committee released a report on how the Cyber Security and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, quote, colluded with big tech and disinformation partners to censor Americans, end quote, adding the informational fire hose we worked and by. The 36-page report raises three familiar issues. First, government actors work with third parties to overturn the First Amendment. Second, censors prioritize political narratives over truthfulness. Third, an unaccountable bureaucracy hijacked American society. So the House report reveals that the CISA, a branch of the Department of Homeland Security, worked with social media platforms to censor posts it considered disinformation or malinformation. And Brian Scully, the head of the group censorship team, conceded that this process known as, quote, switchboarding would, quote, trigger content moderation. So virtually everything that you would have been able to know that would have given you a broader perspective to make a more informed and honest freedom of choice, all censored, all of it censored. So, and we want to thank Alex Bernson, who used to work for the New York Times. He gained access to thousands of Twitter communications that uncovered concrete evidence that government actors, including White House COVID advisor Andy Slavitt, worked to censor him for criticizing Biden's COVID policies. White House Director of Digital Strategy Bob Flattery privately lobbied social media groups to remove a video of Tucker Carlson reporting the link between Johnson & Johnson's vaccine and blood clots. Facebook worked with the CDC to censor posts related to COVID lab leak hypothesis. Company employees later met with the Department of Health and Human Services to deplatform the Disinformation Dozen, a group including Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Now, these are not cherry-picked examples. They are part of an institutional collusion to strip Americans of their First Amendment rights. And remember journalists Michael Schellenberger and Matt Taibbi exposed the censorship industrial complex, a collection of the world's most powerful government agencies, NGOs, and private corporations that work together to silence dissent. So on the one hand, we will have outstanding and courageous whistleblowers coming forward, as we do now with six Now it's six additional IRS field auditing agents and two really top ones saying that they had plenty of information to go forward on heavy-duty indictments, criminal indictments, put him in prison under Biden, and they were told not to. And so they're told to stand down. The Justice Department was behind all that. So when are those six people, I believe this week or next week, going to be brought in to under oath? And then when are the people involved going to be brought in to say one of you is lying? If we didn't have whistleblowers, we wouldn't have any of this coming forward. If we didn't have whistleblowers, you wouldn't have known about DDT, dioxin, Agent Orange, on 3.5 million American vets coming home from Vietnam sick. You wouldn't know about depleted uranium if it wasn't for the whistleblower Doug Rocky, who was sent over by the Pentagon to see is depleted uranium dangerous, came back and wrote a scathing report, and for that, they silenced him and said anything about depleted uranium is just misinformation. So the media never did a story on it. We did. I did three award-winning documentaries on it and wrote over 12 articles. In fact, I did over 100 programs with Paul Rudishan to help the veterans get some acknowledgement, and it wasn't much, $2 billion, I think it was, for 3.5 million vets. That's a pittance each one. And yet, where would you have been had you not known this? Had you not known that when Happy Rockefeller, the governor's wife, was getting her mammogram, and that was heavily promoted, and all these women began to go out who had completely healthy breasts and no risk factors to get a mammogram? We showed you the science that the mammograms, the way they were taken, would end up causing more cancer of the breast than it would diagnosing correctly a cancer when you could have used something completely non-toxic like thermography. But there are thousands of examples of what happens when you don't challenge where your information comes from because you're in alignment with an ideological purpose, a identity politics purpose. So the truth is irrelevant to you at that point. It's attacking anyone who tells it. So yeah, Daniel Ellsberg is attacked, Max Blumenthal be attacked, Chris Hedges attacked, yeah, and Matt Taibbi attacked, Schellenberg attacked. Anyone who tells the truth today, you're going to be attacked, even though these were all liberals. These were all Democrats. They were the darlings of Keith Olbermann and everyone else, not now. That shows you the kind of intellectual schizophrenia that exists in our corporate media. And that's unfortunate. I'm looking at the clock and we're running out of time. I have one more clip that, this is a different clip. This is also whistleblowers coming forward. It took me 6 years to find these people, to get these people together so I could film them. But in time, they came forward. These are some of the strongest minds on the planet, and they're all over the world, when it comes to our failed public health system, and this time mental health. Think of all the people who are told they're depressed, take this antidepressant, or anxious, take this antipsychotic, they're lonely, take, and nothing but drugs. No talk therapy, nothing non-toxic. So I've just completed what I hope will be an informed documentary. So this is very important, and this is only going to have one public showing this coming Sunday at 1 o'clock. Here is a trailer for the film called Manufacturing Madness. And if you want to talk about something that impacted so many people with false information, none of it credible, none of it good science, this is it. So listen and watch this short trailer.
Our culture, our society, the nations of the Western world have been taken over by what I call the psychopharmaceutical complex. It starts with the multi-billion dollar industries that make psychiatric drugs.
The drug industry is interested in drugging us as much as possible and for as long as possible.
They have transformed the medical societies, the psychiatric societies, they've transformed the medical schools, the hospital system, the insurance system. They have transformed how people are treated in the VA, how people are treated in the Army, and everywhere they have pushed drugs.
I was given more than 40 psychiatric drugs. Antipsychotics, sleep medications, anti-anxiety medications, antidepressants, I did all the therapy I was told to do. I was a very good patient. I followed everything the doctors told me to do, everything the therapist told me to do, and I got nothing but worse and worse.
We live in a society where if you have serious mental illness, you die on average 15 to 25 years sooner than the rest of us.
Some people are kept on antidepressants indefinitely. They can't get off them.
These drugs are not safe for long term. They might be safe for dealing with acute psychotic episodes, but they're really not safe for you to be on them for 10, 20 years.
They check themselves in to a psychiatric clinic and they find themselves strapped down and getting ACT treatments. Apparently, your human rights vanish.
Nobody tells you your rights when you're carted off and put in a hospital. Literally feels like you're being arrested.
It became increasingly clear to me that psychiatry was practically a weapon against people who were deviating in whatever way that the authorities defined in the society.
The crimes the drug industry commits are increasing.
The whole medical industrial complex, as it's become, is such a farce and such a disaster.
One of the more unfortunate side effects of those drugs is that once you're on them, coming off them can prove enormously difficult. It can tip you into a worse psychological state than you were before you took the drug.
Lobotomy, shock, and drugs all harm the brain. Psychiatry has no tools that help the brain. And since psychiatry is masquerading as a science, it really becomes a materialistic religion. That is, it takes political issues. The first calls for mass extermination were not from the Nazis, but from the psychiatrists in the 1920s, before Hitler had taken power.
For decades, psychiatry has been busy turning our world into a madhouse, using every kind of horrific cure, from bleeding, lobotomies, to electroshock therapy. Worldwide, over 77 million people are taking psychiatric drugs, known to cause addiction, violent and homicidal behavior, and suicide. In the United States alone, 8.4 million children are currently being prescribed psychiatric medication. How did millions of people become hooked on destructive drugs? Psychiatry is a $330 billion a year industry without a single cure. Before any more lives are lost, it is time to take a deeper look at manufacturing madness. So if you are interested in the most powerful film done to date on our mental health field, dealing with loneliness, dealing with any form of anxiety and depression the wrong way, and what to do to make it right, it's all in this film. The film is 2 hours and 6 minutes long, one showing only, this Sunday over Zoom. Call this number. You can get online now at GaryNall.com, or you can call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, or call Neil in the Vitamin Closet at 646-926-5430. You won't want to miss it. All of my films are always packed. I don't want people calling me on Monday saying, gee whiz, I couldn't get on. That happens all the time because we've got this most bandwidth that they could provide. It's never enough. And then you'll see a lot of whistleblowers telling you the truth about it. Everything you've been told about psychiatry has been a lie. And who do I have telling it? Some of the world's most respected psychiatrists. You'll hear from the former head of the National Institutes of Mental Health. You'll hear from scholars, emeritus professors on the whole history of psychiatry. And it's really brilliant the way that that my editor, Roland Marconi, and Valerie have edited this together. Valerie Van Cleve, they've both been working with me for over 35 years, and Richard Gale doing the research. So this is a powerful and I'll be there. It's not going to be a long day, as most of my webinars are, probably around 3 hours. I am going to take questions, so there'll be a question-answer session afterwards. Call 877-627-5065, or just go there. We're out of time, but I also want to address a comment, because on our sister station, BAI Today, I played last night's Progressive Commentary Hour about AIDS, and Mitchell Cohen commented about Lynn Gannett, who I had mentioned. Quote, Gary, great to hear you mention Lynn Gannett. Have you heard from her? She was one of the founding resources people in No Spray Coalition, but haven't heard from her in years. Yes, Mitch, I did hear from her. She's going under her new married name. She said that she was in the battle for so long, she won't want to be in the battle anymore. I fully understand that. Also, Mitch says, important to note that there were factions in ACT UP New York, one committee supporting the pharmaceutical industry, and another that I was part of, investigating and promoting holistic and alternative treatments. What exists today, calling itself ACT UP, are the pro-pharma faction, end quote, Mitchell Cohen. Mitch has been a fighter, an activist, and a real supporter of BAI for a long time. Yeah, and I remember being the only journalist at the time in America to take on that entire pharmaceutical industry against the treatment, such as AZT. It was killing people, but they were promoting it. And for that, they attacked me. But fortunately, I'm still here, still speaking out. Don't take whistleblowers for granted, because the establishment has got them all in their sights, and they've got 1,000 ways to deplatform you and to harm you. So appreciate the people who are out there doing the fighting for you, so you can be better informed if you choose to be. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day. Stay tuned for Hugh Treeslade.